I'm Don Machholtz, and you are listening to Looking Up with Don. This is the Looking Up with Don podcast, episode number 32, for the week of August 12th, 2020. The related website for this podcast is donmachholtz.com. That is spelled donmachholtz.com, two H's. What's up in the sky this week? As our week begins on Wednesday, August 12th, the moon is 40% full in the morning sky, headed towards the planet Venus, of which it will pass north on August 15th. On August 12th, Venus reaches greatest elongation in the morning sky, 46 degrees from the sun as seen from the Earth. Venus will hang out in the morning sky through the end of this year and until late March of next year. So if you want to see Venus, get out there before dawn. The moon will be new on August 19th at 0241 Universal Time. For North America, that translates to the evening of August 18th. Those wishing to see a thin lunar crescent are in luck this week. The best morning to try this would be the morning of the 18th, when the moon is only about 12 hours away from becoming new. The northern hemisphere is favored for this because from the northern hemisphere, the moon will stand straight up from the sun on the eastern horizon. Following new moon, it enters the evening sky. Seeing the thin crescent moon in the western sky on the 19th is best done from the equatorial regions, from where the moon will be straight up above the sun after sunset. The Perseid meteor shower is still active early this week. Despite the moon, get out there and see some meteors using the observing tips I suggested last week. Now is a great time to get out there and observe the planets Jupiter and Saturn, both in the southern sky. It's also a good time for observations requiring a dark sky, as the moon will be absent all week long. For those wanting to do a Messe marathon this week, I'll be outlining that near the end of this podcast. Will you be able to see the International Space Station this week? This week we have four zones. If you live north of 15 degrees north, and that is most of us, the International Space Station will not be visible this week. Get ready, though, the following week we will see it in our morning sky. From 15 degrees north to about 5 degrees south, it will be visible in the evening sky for the first part of the week, then in the morning sky for the second half of the week. Between about 5 degrees south and 25 degrees south, it will be in both your morning and evening sky for the whole week. South of 25 degrees south, the ISS will be in your morning sky for the first part of the week, then it switches to your evening sky. To determine where the International Space Station will be in your sky, go to the website heavens-above.com, enter your location, then click on ISS. There is a worldwide organization that provides some useful tools for the amateur astronomer, and I would like to take a few minutes to talk about it. It is called the Astronomical League. You can join by joining one of the many hundreds of local astronomy clubs under the umbrella of the Astronomical League. When you join your local club, those that are listed on their website, you automatically become a member of the Astronomical League. You can find a list of these associated local astronomy clubs at their website, astroleague.org. Lacking that, you can become a member at large for $40 a year in the U.S. or $50 a year for those outside of the U.S. With the membership, you get a copy of their quarterly magazine four times a year, and discount prices on astronomy-related books and magazines. Perhaps most important, and this is why I'm bringing it up, you can participate in their observing programs designed to help you become versed and well-learned in many astronomical topics. Think of them as being similar to merit badges in scouting or like taking a college course. When you enroll to start a program, in some cases, you purchase an observing manual outlining the program with useful information to get you started. Or for many programs, all of the information is available online at their website, astroleague.org. Some programs are for the unaided eye, some for binoculars, some for small telescopes, and some for big telescopes. The idea is to observe the objects, write short notes about each, and submit them to the coordinator for the programs. Then you can receive a certificate or pin. I encourage you to go to the website, astroleague.org, that's org, not com, and click on Observe. That will bring you to the observing programs. I know amateur astronomers who have, over the years, become experts in many observing fields, mainly by taking on several of the available programs. Whether it be the study of the sun, the moon, the planets, comets, galaxies, nebula, Messier objects, Herschel objects, ARP galaxies, variable stars, double stars, constellations, sketching, radio astronomy, artificial satellites, or outreach, it is all here at the Astronomical League. I would like to mention something that I first discussed on our 23rd podcast back on June 10th. The coronavirus pandemic has continued to isolate people, and it has prevented astronomy clubs from meeting in person. So many astronomy clubs continue to hold their meetings on Zoom or perhaps some other platform. I suggest that you look for local astronomy clubs or even some very distant from you that hold their meetings on Zoom and write to them and ask if you can be a guest. In most cases, they do allow people to join as a guest for the meeting. I've been doing this now for several months and sitting in on the meetings, just listening to what goes on. The business portions of the meetings are usually shorter than what they have when they have the meetings in person. But the main event of most of these astronomy club meetings will be a lecture or some type of demonstration by one of the members or by somebody who they have acquired to give a talk or a presentation to the meeting. I've learned a lot about astronomy just by sitting in at these meetings and listening to the lectures. You can do that too. So I recommend you find some clubs that do have the Zoom meetings and you join in and just listen in and learn. Don't think that you have to say anything. You just sign in when the meeting begins and sit and listen. Now for the comets. The positions in right ascension and declination for all five comets mentioned this week are available on podcast 27, comma positions. All five are also shown on Podcast 32, Map 1, which you can download for free from my website. Comet 2P Encke is magnitude 11 in dimming. Comet 88P Howe is magnitude 10 in slowly brightening. We'll be following this comet for the next few months, and I'll discuss it in more detail next week. That brings us to our final three comets. Let's refer to Podcast 32, Map 2, which you can download free from my website. Here we see the movements of three comets. Comet 2017 T2, Pan-STARRS, magnitude 10. Comet 2019 U6, Lemon, magnitude 10. And Comet 2020 F3, NEOWISE, magnitude 6. Comet Pan-STARRS and NEOWISE track with each other southward, while Comet Lemon takes off northward through the constellation Boötes. In the northern hemisphere, we will have Comet Pan-STARRS and NEOWISE for the next 5 weeks as they continue moving south and dimming. Meanwhile, Comet Lemon stays in our sky for many more months, but it dims out rather quickly. There has been a new comet discovered by the NEOWISE satellite. It is called Comet 2020 P1 NEOWISE. Now, the bright comet we had in July was also called Comet NEOWISE, but a different comet, 2020 F3. This one is 2020 P1. Presently, it is magnitude 16 and deep in the southern sky. It is expected to reach perihelion on October 20th at 0.34 astronomical units from the Sun. It could reach magnitude 6, but will remain close to the Sun as seen from the Earth when it's at its brightest. It is in the evening southern sky, and as it moves north, it passes south of the Sun and into the morning sky in early October. By then, it should be visible to amateur astronomers south of the equator through telescopes at about 30 degrees from the Sun. As elongation decreases, it becomes more difficult to see from the southern hemisphere. On the day of perihelion, October 20th, the comet is 15 degrees from the Sun, and from mid-northern latitudes, the comet is 15 degrees above the Sun and rises 75 minutes before the Sun. Over the next week, viewing conditions improve slightly as the comet is expected to start dimming. More about that, though, as we approach October. It is presently 1.5 times further from the Sun than we are, and it has a long ways to go, as its closest it will get to the Sun is 0.34 astronomical units, or about a third as close to the Sun that we are. A lot can happen to a comet between now and then. This week we learn a tiny constellation. It is called Sagitta, the arrow. And guess what? It looks like an arrow. It is identified on Podcast 32, Map 3. As darkness falls these evenings, the constellation is high in the eastern sky, between the constellation Cygnus and Aquila. Generally, it is made up of four bright stars, two for the feathers at the back end of the arrow, one for the tip of the arrow, and the fourth star between these two. The Milky Way runs through this area. The constellation aimed to know, Beta, is a tiny arrow known as Sagitta. This week, we're going to find and observe two deep sky objects, the globular cluster M71, which is embedded in Sagitta, and M27, the Dumbbell Nebula, which is just over the border and in the constellation Vulpecula. Let's begin with M71. It is identified on podcast 32, map 3. M71 is magnitude 8.8 and 7 arc minutes across. It truly is a globular cluster, small but close, only 13,000 light years away. Through binoculars, it should appear as a hazy patch of light. The area around M71 is rich with stars. M27 is the Dumbbell Nebula, a planetary nebula. It is also plotted on podcast 32, map 3. The way I find it is to go 3 degrees north of the end star in Sagitta. At magnitude 7.4, it measures 11 by 8 arc minutes in size. It lies only 1,200 light years from us. Through binoculars, you might notice some shape to it. That is, it does not appear to be round, but more oblong. M71 and M27 look great in the telescope. M71 has strings of stars running through it. Check it out at high magnification. Also, there seems to be no condensed center, as is often seen in most globular clusters. For M27, look at the shape. The brightest portion looks like an hourglass or bow tie or a dumbbell such as used for weightlifting. The fainter extensions start to complete but not finish a complete circle. Through the telescope, also look for color in M27. Now for fun with the marathon. Late March is the best time to do the Messier Marathon, as the greatest number of the 110 objects can be observed in one night. But you can observe the Messier objects all year long, and if you string a bunch together to make a marathon of it, you can do that any night of the year. The new moon this month is the 19th of August. Many astronomers go out on the weekends, and that would be the 15th and 16th of August. The maximum number of Messier objects visible in one night around now is about 98 or 99 objects. About 87 of those objects can be observed within 2 hours of evening darkness. At this time of the year, the Virgo galaxies are setting in the west as the marathon begins. Clear, transparent, dark skies are important for picking up these galaxies in the western sky. As you begin on the evening of August 15th, if M65 and M66 are still above your horizon, get them. Then head south for M83. If it's still above your horizon, then go over to M104, also just above your western horizon. Your next object is M61, then M49, then the rest of the Virgo galaxies. Then head north a bit and hit M64 and 53 and M3. Then head further north to M81, M82, then the objects near the Big Dipper. Next, you have to head south for M80 and M4. Then continue on the summer Milky Way objects. Continue working your way across the sky. After 2 full hours of marathoning, you could easily have observed 87 objects. In the morning sky, your final objects will be M42 and M43 and M78 in Orion, also M79, which is south of Orion. And maybe in the twilight, you'll be able to pick up M50, M41, and M44. Seeing 100 Messier objects in mid-August from mid-northern latitudes would be a major feat and requires that you get M65 and 66 and 83 and 104 in the evening sky and M50 in the morning and everything else in between. Nevertheless, for the Messier Marathon, the final count is not the most important thing. No, the most important thing is seeing many or most of the Messier objects in one night and having a good time doing it. That's why we do it. You have been listening to Looking Up with Don, podcast episode number 32 for August 12th, 2020. I'm Don Mockholtz. Once again, the related website for this podcast is donmockholtz.com. That is spelled donmockholtz.com. Two H's. God willing and pod willing, I'll be back next week for another episode of Looking Up with Don. We'll discuss what's going on in the sky. We'll continue observations of comets in the evening sky. I'll talk a little bit more about Comet Howe. We'll learn a new constellation, and I'll explain how you can rent a telescope to photograph the sky for you. Thank you for listening. See the sky this week. I'll see you next week.